It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. This morning, ham, bacon, and eggs. It's not just what's for breakfast. For some students, it's a possible career path.
Well, they are now calling me the bacon queen, actually, to be honest.
That story and more coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. Coronavirus outbreaks have ravaged meatpacking plants, raising the specter of food shortages, and grocery shopping has become a fraught experience for some consumers. As Liam Niemeyer reports, the pandemic is raising interest in locally sourced food, and that could have lasting effects on agriculture.
Debbie Dolworth has a lot of conversations with her cattle every day.
They talk to me.
She's been corralling them from pasture to pasture on her farm for decades near Monkey's Eyebrow, Kentucky, nestled in a bend of the Ohio River. One way to get them moving, through the threat of an electric wire.
They learn very quickly. They don't like being shocked, and they don't come back. They're pretty smart that way. They're smarter than people that way.
Dolworth and her husband usually sell their beef through word of mouth, and they were worried when demand dropped off last year. Then the pandemic hit.
Then people started calling.
Multiple calls a day all through April, many completely new customers wanting their beef.
We have way more customers than we can find processors to take.
And Dolworth isn't the only cattle farmer slammed with orders. University of Kentucky professor Kenny Burdine specializes in livestock marketing and says he's also seen a rise in interest among local farmers.
So just kind of personally, we do some freezer beef ourselves, and I can tell you that we've seen some interest because of this. I think it's going
to
grow.
He says some local cattle processors in Kentucky have had to push back appointments to turn cattle into beef until later this year. That's because other local cattle farmers are also seeing high demand and are trying to get their cows processed into beef to meet that demand. But why all this new demand amid a pandemic?
Meat plants shutting down because everybody has COVID. How does that affect, you know, the meat I'm eating? And then you go to the store and it's not there. And it's just, so your traditional food system's a little bit scary right now.
That's Fritz Bettner, who leads the Turnrow Appalachian Farm Collective in West Virginia. It's a regional cooperative of produce and livestock farmers who sell directly to those in the state. He says the fear of food shortages in grocery stores, particularly meat, could be pushing new customers toward buying local. And his cooperative sales for produce and meat have exploded also, from about $5,000 a week before the pandemic to nearly $30,000 a week.
I keep buying meat from producers. First it was 50 pounds, then 100 pounds, then 300 pounds, and then about 300 pounds all gone. Then 2 days, and I'm like, all right, maybe I should be buying 1,000 pounds.
That's even as demand for food from restaurants has halted due to months-long closures. Bettner also sees an opportunity to introduce people to a new way to think about food, buying from more local and small-scale producers.
Well, I think we'll retain a lot of that. Now, things could change if we head into a deep depression or something where, you know, no one has jobs and money in order to pay for it.
Some farmers hope this new interest will have benefits for the local economy. Jennifer Tootie Jones raises beef cattle with her family near Lewisburg, West Virginia. She says this pandemic is showing how the federal government and states could be investing more in local agriculture.
Look what we have here, and look at how much more money we could probably bring into our banks, bring into our businesses, loan opportunities. But it's not coal, and it's not timber, and it's not stone. And I just don't get it, because it's the thing we all need the most. It's food.
But Jones says how sustainable this boost to local agriculture is comes with a choice. People still have to choose to buy locally versus other options. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Liam Niemeyer.
The Ohio Valley Resource is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. On this weekend's episode of Inside Appalachia, we explore career and technical high school programs. You might think of welding or machine shop, but these career classes can include nursing, media, and even meat processing. Corey Nollinger followed students in Magnolia High School's meat processing class. He brings us their story.
All right, on a little bacon there, 135.
At a 4-H camp in Wetzel County, West Virginia, in the northern panhandle of the state, auctioneers are soliciting bids from a crowd of roughly 100 people. The room looks like a classic bingo hall. There's white walls, harsh fluorescent lighting, but up front, auctioneers decked out in head-to-toe denim sport flashy cowboy hats. They're auctioning off ham, bacon, and eggs.
All right, here we go. Nice ham there. What about 25?
This is the 51st annual Wetzel County Ham, Bacon, and Egg Show. It's an event run by the county's Future Farmers of America program. This isn't your ordinary breakfast fair. The meat and poultry up for auction was raised and butchered by high school students in the county. One of these students is Bailey Fayad.
Well, they are now calling me the bacon queen, actually, to be honest.
This is the second time Bailey, the bacon queen, has received the highest marks on her bacon. A panel of judges assigns each of the hams, dozens of eggs, and slabs of bacon a rank, from choice to grand champion.
Prime is kind of like a way to go, and choice is still pretty good. And then there's your grand and your reserves. So grand champion is first place, and reserve champion is second place. And I actually received grand champion bacon, and I received prime on my ham this year.
The scoring is based on the looks of the product. The judges aren't eating the meat. Some look for fat content, others for appearance or workmanship, some size. But the same hunk of pork could be ranked differently year to year. The auction runs for several hours. More than 100 items are auctioned off one by one. The reserve champion, or second place bacon, sells for $100 per pound, $900 for the whole thing. Then Bailey's bacon is up. She strides around the room in her blue FFA jacket, weaving between the seats, bacon in hand, showing off the product to possible buyers. Last time she had a grand champion bacon, she got $250 per pound. This year,
$425. You say $500? $500 and a quarter. $500 and a quarter. Tied him in a quarter, 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 five and a quarter. Somebody come back here and do CPR on him. $525. $520. $525. Sold to you, man. $500. Give her a hand.
$500 per pound for Bailey's bacon. The bacon weighed in at 6.5 pounds, totaling around $3,300 for Bailey. This is a new record for the auction. It takes her a while to process what just happened.
No, I actually did not expect $500 a pound. That was incredible. I feel pretty awesome right now.
As a senior, this is Bailey's last auction. But the experience, raising the pigs and turning them into grand champion bacon, has taught her some valuable lessons.
It's honestly a great thing to get into because it also shows you a lot of responsibility for outside of school and environment and stuff like that. It is definitely a great impact on kids that they need to do.
The money from the auction goes directly to the students, who cover all the costs of raising an animal, from the feed to processing at the slaughterhouse. And those expenses start when the student first picks out a pig, which they pay for out of pocket for around $1 a pound. The making of a grand champion starts in late August. It's a warm, clear day when the 21 students from Magnolia High School participating in the 52nd Ham, Bacon, and Egg Show pick out their pigs. This happens at the same 4-H camp in New Martinsville where the auction is held. A farmer from Ohio has brought a selection here on a large livestock trailer. The students circle around and peer in to see which of the cute, slightly stressed out pigs they want to take a chance on. This is Austin Stillwagner's first time working with a pig, but he already seems to have a strategy.
He's broad through the back, he's long, which gave him a good bacon, he's deep through the stomach, but whenever you pick him, you want to pick him for your bacon, because you can't shape a bacon, you can shake a ham.
Austin is a freshman, and he hopes to follow in Bailey Fayad's footsteps with mentorship from Bailey's dad, now that she's aged out of the program. While this is Austin's first time selecting a pig, this isn't his first time raising livestock. He's actually worked with Jim Fayad before, raising cows for the county fair.
Jim's helped me with my steers and everything else. So I got grand champion steer this year. He's helped me with all of it. He's helped me with the feed, how to raise it, how to break it, He's helped me with it all, and he asked me if I wanted to do a pig, and I told him yeah.
Austin and the other students select their pigs at around 170 pounds and are expected to raise them until they're around 270 pounds. As the students make their selection, their families or mentors herd the pigs onto smaller trailers and head home. While Austin is strategizing about his first pig, Ham Bacon and Egg Show veteran Libby Yater chooses her pig a little more nonchalantly.
Honestly, whichever one you can get first.
Libby is a senior at Magnolia High and has gone through the program three times. Last year, she made a big mistake that she won't make again, naming the pig.
But this year, I don't think I am because I got pretty attached to them. They're like little dogs. They followed me around. You scratch their belly, they would roll over. They would play in the mud. They would run around. They would carry things in their mouth to you.
That is hard for some students. Usually, it's not that big of an issue. But when it comes up, the instructors try to dissuade students from naming their pigs. Sometimes, the instructors suggest naming them after products the pigs will become. A popular choice? Pork chop.
For Inside Appalachia, I'm Corey Nollinger in New Martinsville, West Virginia.
That was an excerpt from our latest Inside Appalachia episode. To hear the full version of Corey's story, you can tune in Sunday morning at 7 or Sunday evening at 6, or listen to the Inside Appalachia podcast when it drops this afternoon. Led by keyboardist and vocalist Ivan Neville, New Orleans-based funk outfit Dumpsta Funk showcased their musical prowess and unmatched liveliness when they appeared on Mountain Stage in 2014. Our song of the week is their performance of the title track of their 2010 album, Everybody Wants Some.
From the Listen Here CD, everybody wants some. No matter where you come from, whether you're rich, poor, high or low, everybody wants some. That's right. Everybody wants some. Ah, 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 ah. Got the right idea, y'all. Come on. Everybody wants some. Ah, 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 ah. You and me.
That was Dumpsta Funk performing Everybody Wants Some live on Mountain Stage. To hear this and more, tune in Friday and Saturday nights at 8 right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day at our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our Appalachia Health News Project is made possible with support from CAMC and Marshall Health. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Caitlin Tan, Jessica Lilly, Kara Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Eric Douglas, Corey Nollinger, Emily Allen, and Roxy Todd. Brittany Patterson produces our show. Our news director is Glennis Board. I'm Chuck Anzalevich.